Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Hello and welcome to DW's Africa Link program with me, Isaac Mugabe, your host. Stay with us for the next half hour as we bring you the big stories from Africa and around the world.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura, your co-host for the program. We shall also look back at the hashtags that made headlines in this year and, of course, keep you up to date with what's trending on our social radio, so don't miss out.
That's right, indeed. Coming up in the program, talks to ease Congo President Joseph Kabila out of power next year and quell protests over him overstaying his mandate are hanging by a thread. We will keep monitoring the progress of the talks. Also on the program... Christians thronged to churches to thank God for ending the year 2016.
We are spirit beings and we have to establish something in the spirit. So this is the reason why we gather for the all-night vigil. We are putting our footprint into the year spiritually before the year kicks in.
We will be hearing from a blogger in Kenya telling us about his work. But first, let's listen to what is taking place around the world.
I'm Mark Caldwell with the DW News. In a response to alleged cyber meddling by Russia in the US elections, Washington has announced sanctions on Russian officials and intelligence services and ordered the expulsion of 35 Russian diplomats. Russian President Vladimir Putin has ruled out any move to eject American diplomats in retaliation, although his foreign minister Sergei Lavrov urged him publicly to take such a step. Russia continues to deny US accusations that it hacked and stole emails in order to try and help President-elect Donald Trump win the November elections. Trump has said he plans to meet U.S. intelligence leaders next week to learn more. Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza, who plunged his Central African country into chaos by insisting on running for a third controversial term, has said he will let the people decide whether he runs for a fourth term. Our correspondent in Bujumbura is Apollinaire Niiora.
Replying to a question by a journalist about whether he was ready to hand over power in 2020, Burundian President Pierre Nkurunziza emphasized that citizens have the last word. Nkurunziza said the national constitution is soon to be amended, and if citizens requested him to run again for presidency in 2020, he would not betray their will. He indicated that the promise of not running again for the presidency, which he made in 2015, happened in a specific context that could change if citizens were to request it.
This news comes to you from DW in Bonn, Germany. A nationwide ceasefire was holding across most of Syria on Friday, but clashes near Damascus have underlined the fragility of the deal brokered by Turkey and Russia. The Britain-based Syrian Observatory for Human Rights said government and rebel forces were fighting in the Wadi Barada region, where opposition fighters have cut water supplies to the capital. The monitoring group said government jets bombarded the area, but no casualties were reported. Poland has been bidding farewell to Lukasz Orban, the truck driver who was shot and killed when his vehicle was hijacked by the perpetrator of the Berlin Christmas market attack earlier this month. Polish President Andrzej Duda joined Urban's family, friends and neighbours for the driver's funeral in the village of Banyi in northwest Poland. Separately, following the Berlin attack, police across the United Kingdom are stepping up security for the New Year celebrations. Superintendent Phil Langworthy is from the Metropolitan Police.
We have a range of overt and covert measures in place. These include armed officers, a search regime at the fireworks display and elsewhere.
For more news and information, please visit our website dw.com. I'm Mark Caldwell.
This is DW's Africa Link program with me, Isaac Mugabe.
And Wanjiko Mwaura from the social media desk.
We begin today's program in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where talks to ease Congo President Joseph Kabila out of power next year and quell protests over him overstaying his mandate are hanging by a thread. Only last week, the sides appeared near a historic deal that could have paved the way for the first peaceful transfer of power through democratic election since the country gained independence in 1960. However, the talks hit a stumbling block over whether a new prime minister of the DRC will come from the main opposition bloc and on the composition of the electoral commission, which the opposition accuses of pro-government bias. We are monitoring this story and we will update you whenever we can. You can also go to our website, dw.com, for the latest news. Christians across Africa have been thronging to churches for New Year prayers to mark the end of 2016 and pray for a prosperous 2017. Evangelical churches in Zimbabwe, Uganda, and Ghana have gone a step further in attracting followers by putting up heavy adverts calling people for New Year prayers. Our correspondents in Tamale, Northern Ghana, Maxwell Souk, Privilege Missionary in Harare, and Alex Gitter in Kampala visited some of the churches and filed this joint report.
In the outskirts of Tamale, inside a small church building, people have gathered at the Sanctuary of Wind and Fire Assemblies of God Church as head pastor Emmanuel Lambongfant administer prayers to his congregation. Myron is among the congregation. He has come here to receive his Lord's blessings.
I want more of God. I want to have the desire to do the things of God, to win more souls, to be a soul winner for the kingdom.
Menek also came here to receive healings, but such activities come with loud noise that some residents describe it as a nuisance.
Anybody who thinks that he has gained some kind of tutelage in theology a bit, try to set up his own church. Even some of them church start in classrooms.
In Tamale, billboards have been mounted to advertise charismatic church activities as the year rounds to a close. The boards have inscriptions like spiritual movement, Exodus 2016, I believe in miracle part 3, among other themes. But some residents have criticized both their healing abilities and the noise that comes with it.
As 2017 beckons, modern-day prophetic healing churches in Zimbabwe are planning mega all-night prayer vigils to enter the new year. Leading churches are planning big gatherings expected to attract thousands of followers from across the country. While big parties are on the minds of many Zimbabweans as a countdown to 2017, charismatic churches are calling for congregants to attend gatherings to lay their spiritual foundations for 2017. I asked Prime Kufa from the United Family International Church why the start of the new year is so important to his congregation.
We are spirit beings and we have to establish something in the spirit. So this is the reason why we gather for the all-night vigil. We are putting our footprints into the year spiritually before the year kicks in. This is a way of beginning the year. This is a way of taking off where we are in the presence of God.
Zimbabwe has witnessed a rise in the number of charismatic churches with leaders who claim to have healing powers for any form of ailment and misfortunes.
In Uganda, churches have also organized overnight prayers to usher in the new year. Most of these prayers are annual events that have been taking place every year for the last 10 years. They take place at stadiums around Kampala and in big towns across the country. One such event is the national celebration by Pastor Jackson Senyonga. It is dubbed the most popular event of them all.
Do you have children or anyone under your guardianship? This is the time. God says it is the moment you have been waiting for. God is going to help them on the 31st. So join me. I am waiting for you.
In the same radio advert, Pastor Jackson Senyonga is calling his followers to join him to experience a night of miracles. He is calling upon the sick and unemployed and everyone with problems to join them. President Museveni has always made it a point to attend several of the bigger prayer meetings at various points of the night.
DW's correspondents in Tamale, Harare and Kampala. Russian President Vladimir Putin has castigated the United States for bringing sanctions and expelling Russian diplomats amid allegations his country meddled in the American presidential election, but said no U.S. diplomats will be ousted in reprisal for Washington's moves in the wave of hacking attacks. The Obama administration imposed a slate of economic sanctions and others like diplomatic censure and public naming and shaming. So how are these sanctions likely to affect Russia? A question I put to DW's Nicholas Connolly in Moscow.
The real important sanctions were those introduced over the Ukraine crisis, which really put a dampener on huge sections of the Russian economy. Russia has been in recession for the last few years. So these latest sanctions, they affect, you know, a handful of diplomats and some top intelligence officials. And obviously for them, it's not a nice development just ahead of Russia's biggest holiday, the New Year's holiday. But I don't think it's going to have any effect on the lives of ordinary Russians.
And how has the media in Moscow been reporting on the ongoing row between the US and Russia?
Well, the Russian state media are portraying this as a further example of U.S. anti-Russian hysteria. We heard from Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov, who said that Washington was accusing Moscow of all the deadly sins to mask its own failings in foreign policy and also the fact that Democrats lost the presidential election. And you get the sense that with only a few weeks to go before Trump takes office, there's no more any willingness to hold back on their dislike for the Obama team. We heard the foreign ministry spokesperson launching an extraordinary attack on them on her Facebook page. She called the presidential administration angry foreign policy losers.
But again, what is Russia intending to do to counter all the actions that the Obama administration will take, like declassifying some of Russia's military intelligence service cyber activity?
Well, I don't think they're going to react very much. I think in terms of proving their innocence, in inverted commas, over these accusations of hacking. And what was interesting was to see President Putin at his end-of-year press conference last week. He said actually at the end of the day it was less important where these hackers actually were based. What was important, he said, was that their allegations were true. No one had actually refuted these allegations of manipulations within the Democratic Party, for instance. And he said that the resignation of the chairperson of the Democratic Party had proved that these accusations were true. So I think Moscow is just going to sit it out now until January the 20th and hope that nothing worse happens.
I was speaking to DW's Nicholas Connolly in Moscow. And as we promised, we are now ready to review some of the hashtags that were trending in 2016. Over to you, Wanjiko.
Yes, indeed. And to start off, we are going to start with this flag.
Remember, this is a story that we covered for you earlier this year when Zimbabwean cities turned into a ghost town after residents responded to a call by this flag hashtag, Citizens Movement. What were the reactions?
Mahere said, we should stop saying that we have no choice. We always have the option to stand up to bad government and big business. We have the power. We also have Dr. Wale, who gave his opinion, saying it should be a requirement that if you intend to be a president in Africa, you should serve a jail sentence after your term.
Oh, that's quite next to impossible. Anyway, Zimbabwe also recently unveiled bond notes to be used as currency.
And Alex Magaisa said, once upon a time, we had a $100 trillion bill, worth noting. Tomorrow, we will wake up with a Zim dollar apparently equal to the USD. Peter Ndoro said, if you don't regard bond notes as being political tools, then perhaps you are not yet seeing the gravity of the situation at hand. We also had Innocent Maposa saying that Zimbabwe shall be a breadbasket for Africa again.
Anyway, Wanjiko, away from Zimbabwe, what else do you have?
Well, still staying in South Africa, we also had the Stop Racism at Pretoria Girls High. And this was after protests in two South African schools. And one very strong comment was from Tayob, who said, if it's really about discipline, then at least acknowledge that it was insensitively handled. Sanella said, I'm so proud of the girls at Pretoria Girls High. I wish I was as brave as them.
Yeah, anyway, these comments are still, there are very many, but you can, you know, catch up with some of these comments on our Facebook page. That's all for this segment, and yeah, we'll be right back. In case you've just tuned in, this is DW's Africa Link program, live from our studios here in Bonn, Germany. I'm Isaac Mugabe, your host.
And I'm Wanjiko Mwaura from the social media desk.
Coming up in the next 15 minutes, Ghanaians get concerned about the operations of a Ponzi scheme promising huge investments.
I'm afraid of losing my money at the end. I'm considering all these things.
I feel that this microfinance thing that is coming up in Ghana is a low thing because it's getting out of hand and people are losing lots of money through this.
And we will be hearing from a blogger in Kenya telling us about his work, and DW sports editor Chuck Penfold will be talking about football.
That's right, indeed, Wanjiko. Let's go to Ghana, where Ghanaians are getting worried over the operations of a Ponzi scheme, which is a fraudulent investment promising huge returns. The scheme, the Mavodi Mondial Movement, or MMM, is coming to Ghana after it was banned in Nigeria. The entering into Ghana's financial sector by this group is considered to be compounding the financial crisis that hit Ghana after Ponzi financial institutions recently defrauded Ghanaians who invested huge sums of money after they were promised juicy interest returns. Isaac Kalechi in Accra has more.
Ghana's financial sector is currently struggling to recover from a major financial crisis involving Ponzi investment schemes. Millions of Ghanaians have had their monies locked up after investing in microfinance companies. They had been promised huge interest returns over a shorter period, but now they are pleading with Ghana's President John Mahama for retrieval of their investments.
We are not talking here. We are dying. People are sick. People are lying in hospitals. They are suffering there.
Many businesses have collapsed. My store, I was having a store. Now I'm not doing anything. I don't have money to pay for my children's school fees. Many people are dead and many are on their sick days because of this money. It's not easy for us, Mr. President. Pay our money to us because the Bank of Ghana is under roof.
The issue has been at the center of presidential election campaigns in Ghana. The incoming new Patriotic Party government has promised to pay in full the investments of the affected persons. Ghana's central bank also revised its rules to discourage such Ponzi schemes. The deputy governor of the bank, Johnson Isiama, says they have also a support from the German government.
With the passage of the Ghana Deposit Protection Bill, I am happy to inform you that the Bank of Ghana, in collaboration with the German government, will soon establish a deposit protection system in Ghana for the first time in our history. This will ensure protection for small depositors and enhance the safety of the financial system.
Reports of a new investment scheme called the Mavodi Mondial Movement coming into Ghana has emerged. The Russian-owned scheme promises subscribers to donate an amount of money to members of the network. In addition, the clients will get back their invested money in a month with a 30% interest. The scheme has been banned in some African countries, including Nigeria. Financial analyst Osaya Mankwa calls for thorough investigation.
The Bank of Ghana shouldn't allow this to also cascade. They should be very proactive. They should try and see if they can get some of them, interrogate them. And obviously, if it is bad in Nigeria, it's not going to be any good in Ghana.
Officials of Mavodi Mundial Movement in Ghana in a Twitter message told me that their scheme operates a simple system that has a community of voluntary members agreeing and deciding to provide help in order to also receive help. However, some Ghanaians I spoke to are wary of these schemes and perhaps they will think twice before subscribing to the Russian scheme.
I won't be interested in it because I'm afraid of losing my money at the end. I'm considering all these things.
I feel that this microfinance thing that is coming up in Ghana is a low thing because it's getting out of hand and people are losing lots of money through this.
Mavodi Mundia Movement isn't officially licensed to operate in Ghana. Ghanaian officials have told me they will investigate the group to alert unsuspecting consumers.
Isaac Kalechi reporting from Accra.
blog report.
It's now time for this week's blog report, where we speak to leading social media personalities. A little earlier, I spoke to Mutua Matheka, popularly known as @Truthslinger on Twitter and Instagram. He is an architecture student graduate, but solely practices photography. Now he shoots photos of people, buildings, food, and is currently part of a project dubbed Unscrambling Africa. He tells us more about this.
Photography became a lot more fun than architecture. So, because, you know, if you practice architecture, you know architecture is a very formal profession. It's more management than it is design. Photography is not the same way. Photography, I get to be in control of what I want to be the outcome, and I can decide the direction to take. And there's less time between the output. So it seemed a lot more fun. So I quit architecture to follow photography.
Unscrambling Africa. Please tell us more about that.
So what Unscrambling Africa is, it's an exploration of African cities and visual documentation of the same. We are not really going around saying we have the answers. As Africans ourselves, all from Kenya, we just want to go to African cities in different countries and explore them, see how they are, explore their architecture, explore their culture, explore especially the culture around built spaces and how we use them. That's the main thing that we want to explore. And then we just want to document that and then share it with everyone else. Every time we talk about African cities and African culture, it's mostly from a traditional perspective, not from a civilized perspective. We know that there's a lot of African civilization that needs no comparison. It was great by itself, and I'm curious to see if any of this was carried forward into now.
And how do you think this will change perceptions of Africa?
If I use the example of Nairobi, which I've been shooting since 2010, you'll see that the first few comments, maybe the first half of the whole stream of comments, is very skeptical and very negative. Most guys will be saying things like, this can't be Nairobi, you must have photoshopped the lights. That was the gist of the first few comments. And that changed. Like over a few years, it started becoming different. It started being, oh, wow, I need to go and see, where did you shoot this from? And people would go, and they will take their own pictures. And so I think just by looking at that, there has been a shift in the way, in what people expect from the images of Nairobi. So I think it works. I believe it's a slow process. It's not a quick one. It's not, I show you a picture today, and then suddenly you're like, wow, Africa now suddenly is, my opinion is changed about Africa. So for me, I know it's, you know, I like to play the long con. So I'm okay with my images just changing our perceptions slowly by slowly. But at least I hope that when the new ideas stick, that they stick for good.
Thank you so much, Mutua Matheka, for speaking to us from Nairobi. And if you want to join in on the discussion, go to our Facebook page, DW Africa. And remember, you can also follow him, Mutua Matheka, on social media @Truthslinger on Twitter and Instagram.
Time now to take a look at sports, and we'll be focusing on Bundesliga in 2016. And to discuss that with is DW's sports editor, Chuck Penfold, who starts by telling us the major highlights of the Bundesliga this year.
I think you can't look beyond starting with RB Leipzig. This team that only started up about 7 years ago went up through all the divisions and got promoted for the first time to the Bundesliga ahead of this season. They have just really livened up the Bundesliga title race.
True that, yeah.
Fast, counter-attacking football. Really putting Bayern to the test until they actually played Bayern. And that turned out to be one of maybe Bayern's best game of the start of the first half of the season. A number of interesting signings from the summer, starting maybe with Serge Gnabry, who's just 21 years old, and he really broke out in the Olympics in the summertime playing for Germany.
Yeah.
He went to Bremen from Arsenal, scored 7 goals. Bremen not doing that great this season, but he's been really one of the bright points. Another big signing was one of the brightest talents in Europe, Ousmane Dembele. He's had a pretty good start for Dortmund with four goals.
What are your projections for the Bundesliga after the holidays, especially for the top teams that we all know? Do you see players really coming back reloaded with the energy, or the holiday might take its toll and they come back, you know, like lazy ducks, you know?
Well, you know, they're supposed to be professional, so it shouldn't be the holiday that takes its toll. Maybe the one thing is that, especially for the national team players, they had the Euro in the summertime. So they've had, and it's a shorter break this winter than usual. So maybe that's going to contribute to things. But I think they'll all be raring to go when the season starts up.
Now, let's get to one of the most ambitious plans by the FIFA president, Gianni Infantino. He has outlined plans to expand the World Cup to 48 teams from 32. How much support do you think he will get from federations? And if approved, when can they take place? And in what format, anyway?
Unfortunately, I think the plan is going to go through. He was speaking at a conference in Dubai just the other day. He said the vast majority of the federations support his plan. His plan, I think, is I think it's about 16 teams of or groups of three, if I've got my math right, which is a bit crazy to me because it's almost not worth having a group if you've only got three teams. Others have said what needs to be done is keep the main tournament at 32, but have sort of a pre-tournament with 16 teams to try to give them a chance to get in some of the lower not as strong teams. He has said it's all about trying to be more inclusive. And, you know, there's a lot of countries like my country, Canada, that can't get into the World Cup. They haven't done it since 1986. They're obviously supporting this.
It's a long time, yeah.
It sure is.
Perhaps to give them a chance to come.
So they're obviously, and in fact, the president of CONCACAF, which is the North American and Central American and Caribbean Federation, and he's a Canadian, he's come out in favor of it. And the other thing, though, Infantino has said, which I find interesting, is it will be the most financially appealing of the options. And I think we all know money rules.
Yeah, money rules, yeah. Chuck Penfold, sports editor at DW. Interesting as always. Anyway, welcome back if you're just joining us. This is the Social Radio segment.
And today being the last show of 2016, we review some of the African stories that went viral on social media. We start in Nigeria, where the hashtag The Other Room was trending.
This is after President Muhammadu Buhari, while on a state visit to Berlin, Buhari said his wife belongs in the kitchen, living room, and the other room.
And a number of Facebook users on the DW's Hausa Facebook page who viewed the DW exclusive interview where Muhammad Buhari made these comments say they were alarmed by their president's view of his wife. Alaji from Kano commented and said, both in Islam and modern thinking, it's not like the woman's position is in the kitchen only, but he is not ashamed to tell the world that his wife belongs to the kitchen in this 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
Austin said the other room was excused as a joke, but the president's words matter. Millions of girls are forced to stifle their dreams.
Well, it is still unclear whether Buhari was joking or not when he made the controversial statement while standing next to Germany's Chancellor Angela Merkel.
She is currently perceived as the most powerful woman on earth.
Okay.
Garba Shehu, Buhari's spokesperson, had sought to downplay the sexist comments as a joke, but the president has stuck to his word.
That was a controversial topic indeed. Anyway, what else you have apart from, you know, those female sexist marks, you know?
Well, in 2016, the world also lost one of Africa's greatest musicians, Papa Wemba.
Papa Wemba. Papa Wemba died at the age of 66 after collapsing on stage in Abidjan, Cote d'Ivoire, during the FEMUA Urban Music Festival on Sunday, the 24th April 2016. It was a very, very sad day for the music fraternity.
Indeed, and using the hashtag RIP Papa Wemba, messages of condolences streamed from all around the world. Prince Abenga said, street kids for whom you became a father cannot be consoled. They will miss you forever, and so will your DRC people. Someone who goes by the name Duke of Pop said, I cannot continue with my life today when they are burying Papa Wemba today. We also have Alan Schoenfield, who said, Africa's and the world's greatest musician has passed, so sad.
I'm afraid that's all the time we have for these comments. There are indeed very, very many. Thanks for your comments. For more news, visit our website, dw.com/Africa.
And visit our Facebook page, DW Africa.
And on behalf of the entire production team with me or with us in the studios, have a wonderful new year.
And a very prosperous one.
Join us again next year on Monday, the 2nd January 2017.